It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel. All at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome one and all to the weekly download from the Radio Theater Channel, the RTC. Today we have some police business to engage with, two programs for you to listen to today, and we'll follow that with some comedy because, you know, you got to lighten the mood a little bit after all that police work. We'll start off with the 21st Precinct. This is called The Plant. It's from 1953.
21st Precinct, Sergeant Collins. What do you mean robbed? Held up? Where is this? The what, Bar and Grill? Oh. What's the address? Yeah. Did they have guns? How many?
You're in the muster room at the 21st Precinct, the nerve center. A call is coming through. You will follow by transcription the action taken pursuant to that call from this minute until the final report is written in the 124 room at the 21st Precinct.
All right, just wait for the officers. They'll be right there. Yes, right away. They'll be right there.
21st Precinct. It's just lines on a map of the city of New York. Most of the 173,000 people wedged into the 9/10 of a square mile between Fifth Avenue and the East River wouldn't know if you asked them that they lived or worked in the 21st. Whether they know it or not, the security of their homes, their persons, and their property is the job of the men of the 21st Precinct.
The 21st, 160 patrolmen, 11 sergeants, and 4 lieutenants, of whom I'm the boss. My name is Kennelly, Frank Kennelly. I'm captain in command of the 21st. It was 2:20 p.m. I had just returned from patrol of the precinct, and I was in my office speaking to a photographer who had his studio near the station house in regard to arrangements for making new individual pictures of the members of my command, which are required for departmental files every 5 years. And here are some samples of my work, Captain. Excuse me a second, Mr. Bell.
Oh, sure, go right ahead.
21st Precinct, Captain Kennelly.
Sergeant Collins on TS, Captain.
Yes, Sergeant.
Paychecks are here, Captain.
All right, tell Lieutenant Pope to assign a man to make distribution.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, Mr. Bell.
Well, that's perfectly all right, Captain. The samples.
Oh, yeah. This is the size we require, isn't it?
Yes, yes, that's the exact size.
Mm-hmm. Well, looks like you do very nice work, Mr. Bell.
We try, Captain.
Well, what do you think you'd have to charge each man?
Let's see. You told me you had about 175 men to be photographed?
Yeah, that's right. Plus about 15 members of the 21st Squad, the detectives. I imagine most of them might want to take advantage of the convenience.
But to be perfectly honest with you, Captain, I'd be willing to give a very good rate to make the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And hope to make my profit in case any of the men want to buy prints for their own personal use, the enlargements.
Oh, well, that's understandable. But I don't want you pressuring anyone around here to buy prints.
Oh, no, I won't.
What do you think you charge each man?
Well, let's say, $2.
Uh-huh.
And included in that, I would furnish them with one glossy, the same size as the official picture.
All right. That sounds fair enough, Mr. Bell.
Good.
We'll get you a room to work in on the third floor.
Oh, fine.
Come in.
Excuse me, Captain.
Come in, Sergeant.
Signal 30 just came over the air.
Uh-huh.
Third Avenue near 68. An armed robbery at a bar and grill. Bartender and customers are holding a suspect.
All right, I'll go.
Captain?
Oh, Mr. Bell, Sergeant Collins will take you to see Patrolman Archer. He's the 124 man. Sergeant, tell Archer to get Mr. Bell set up and going with the photograph.
Yes, sir. I'll get a car in for you, Captain.
All right, you do that. Cassidy.
Yes, Captain.
Are you going over to that armed robbery?
Yes, sir. Goldman and I. Do you want to ride?
Yeah, okay. Never mind the car, Sergeant. I'll go over with the detective.
We'll park right on
by.
You certainly move fast around here, don't you?
When things happen fast, you move fast.
Well, I guess that's life.
Yep, life and then some.
We were at the scene of the holdup within 5 minutes. Patrolmen Owen Kenny and Ernest Pagano in sector car number 3, the first to arrive in response to the radio signal, had taken custody of the suspect being held by the bartender and 2 customers. She was a young woman, hardly 20 years old. The victim and witnesses had told Sergeant Waters and other officers that the young woman, in the company of 2 men, also in their 20s, came into the place shortly after 1 o'clock and ordered drinks. When the lunch hour rush had dwindled to 2 patrons, the men got up from their booth, walked to the bar, flashed a gun, and held up the place. They took $230 from the cash register and fled, leaving the young woman, who said her name was Edith Hargrave, seated in the booth. Detectives Cassidy and Goldman began the investigation, and Edith Hargrave was taken from the scene of the holdup to the 21st Squad, where Detective Cassidy was in the process of making her fingerprints.
All right, honey, it's not that bad. Just hold the handle limp and let me do the work. Don't step it up like that.
Try.
That's it. Limp. Now give me the whole hand. Limp, that's it. Relax. Okay, that's all. Wash up over here.
Where?
Over here, Edie.
Yes.
There's soap and there's towels.
Yes, sir.
What about the lieutenant? Is he still tied up?
Yes, he is.
Just plenty of that soap, Edie. That stuff comes off hard.
Yes, sir.
But very hard. Want to change your mind about anything, Edie?
What do you mean, change my mind?
There's towels. I mean about how you told us you were never arrested before.
I never was.
Use the towels. Your hands will get chapped.
Never was. Honest.
All right, we'll see.
Honest.
Well, like for everything, there's always got to be a first time in there. In the trash basket. Okay, Edie. Come on.
Yes, sir. Oh, I can take my purse, can't I?
Sure, bring it along. You're sure now before we get any farther? All right, sit down here.
Yes, I'm sure.
Here, Edie, sign this card here.
What is it? What am I signing?
It just says that you verify that these are your fingerprints.
Oh. Where am I going now? To jail?
No, not just yet.
I want to go home.
Cassidy.
So do I. Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right, Edie. In the office. Over there, to the desk.
Yes, sir.
Edie, this is Lieutenant King. He's the commander of the 21st Squad.
Sit down, Edie.
Yes, sir.
Well, I understand you picked yourself some fine company.
How was I to know?
A smart girl finds out before she goes bar hopping with two guys like that.
I didn't have a date with the two of them. I only had a date with one, Dick. That's the only one I know. I didn't know the other, honest.
Did he ever tell you where he lived, Dick?
No, he never did.
Didn't you ask him?
No.
Why not?
Well, if I asked him, I thought he might think I was curious about going there. Didn't care to have one thing lead to another.
You met him when?
3 or 4 nights ago. I told the detectives. He came into the place and...
Place where you work?
Yeah, the place I work. Sat down at the counter and he ordered a cup of coffee and I served it to him. Things were slow. Before you know it, we got to talking.
Guess you got to talking too much, huh?
Well, he looked like a nice enough boy.
The other one didn't look like a nice boy, did he?
I didn't even know about him. Dick and I had this date for this afternoon before I went to work. He came by for me, and the other boy was in the car. He said, we're all going out for a good time. I said, has he got a date? And he said, he'll get a date. Meanwhile, we'll all go out and have a couple of drinks. So we went to these places, and you know.
Are you in the habit of drinking in the daytime?
Well, I worked night.
You were out with him Sunday night?
I told the detectives I was off Sunday night, didn't I?
Yes, you told us.
Where'd you go Sunday night?
Went to a few places.
Where, for instance?
Gee, I don't know. A couple of bars, 3 or 4.
Well, where first?
Down Times Square.
Where in Times Square?
Well, on Broadway, I think. Maybe 7th Avenue, I don't know. It was one of those places where the bars are circle-like and people sit around watching musicians play on a stand-up behind the bar.
Did he talk to anybody in there?
Just me. And the bartender to order drinks.
Oh. Where else did you go?
After that?
Yes.
To another bar near there. We had a couple of drinks there, too. I think I had a sandwich also. The only place he talked to somebody was much later. A man.
Somebody he knew?
Oh, yes.
Where was this?
Another bar.
In Times Square, too?
No. No, as a matter of fact, it was up around here someplace, because I remember we came uptown through Central Park in his car, and we came out of the park at 65th Street, you know? I remember that. It wasn't far from there, on Lexington or 3rd Avenue, something like that. I had a few drinks.
Well, who was it he talked to?
Friend of his. Nellie. I remember Nellie.
I thought you said it was a man he talked to.
Nellie was a man. That's how I remember. I thought, a funny man named Nellie. Isn't that funny? A man named Nellie?
What?
I don't know. I didn't hear.
You're going to have to help us more than this, Edie. Those two boys are wanted for robbery.
I didn't have anything to do with it. don't know anything about it.
Well, you know something about it now. I hope it's not long before we all know a lot more about it.
I returned to the station house at 4 p.m. in time to turn out the platoon for the night tour. Lieutenant King was waiting in the muster room for me. He said that he had already talked to the desk officers at the 19th and 23rd precincts. He would like a description of the man Nellie announced at each of the turnouts in the precincts on the Upper East Side in the hope that some patrolman on post was acquainted with Nellie or had heard of him. I invited him to make the announcement himself. With Lieutenant King, I stood behind the desk. It was exactly 4 o'clock. The 53 men who would patrol every inch of the precinct between that moment and midnight were lined up in the back room awaiting the signal of the desk officer. On the sound of the bell, they marched out into the muster room in a military manner and formed ranks facing the desk.
Saunders.
The roll was called for entry
Scully.
In the blotter.
Present.
Dowd.
Yeah.
Turner.
Yeah.
Underwood.
Here.
Weber.
Yeah.
Weeks.
Present.
Wolf.
Present.
Ziegler.
Here.
All right, man. A couple of things. We've had 3 or 4 complaints about peddlers annoying people on the streets to purchase toys and flowers. You see any of these peddlers on your post, I want you to stop them and examine their license. If they have no license, give them a summons. Or if they're causing too much of a nuisance, bring them into the station house. I want these complaints to stop. Also, beginning tomorrow and for the next 2 days, the photographer will be on the third floor to make official photographs for the department files before and after the 8 o'clock and 4 o'clock turnouts. Details are on the bulletin boards. Now, Lieutenant King has something to say to you. Pay close attention. Lieutenant.
We had an armed robbery in the precinct this afternoon. In the course of the investigation, we've developed the information that one of the suspects is acquainted with a man who hangs around a bar someplace on the east side. Perhaps in this precinct, perhaps on the 19th or 23rd. We'd like to locate the acquaintance in the hope he could lead us to the suspects. The acquaintance is described as about 35 years old, 5 feet 8 inches and 150 pounds. He has brown hair, rather thin on top. We know he goes under the name of Nellie. On your posts, have any of you men run into a man of that description known by the name of Nellie?
Lieutenant?
Yes, Weber? Are you acquainted with a man named Nellie answering that description?
Yes, sir.
All right, you stay here. You're temporarily relieved from your post.
Yes, sir.
Sergeant, post the platoon.
Platoon, stand sharp. Right, face. Forward, hark.
Weber.
Yes, sir, Captain.
Come on to my office. Matt?
Coming, Captain.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Which is your post, Weber?
Number 11, Lieutenant.
You know a Nellie, huh?
Yes, sir. He's one of the guys that hang out around there.
Has he ever given you any trouble?
No, he stays pretty clear of me, Captain.
What does he do?
He says he's a mechanic. He might be working at it, I don't know. Hangs around 2 or 3 bars there every night.
Uh-huh.
Had some information that he was hustling policy slips once a couple of months ago. Reported it and the plainclothesman checked him out. Nothing to it, I heard. I do know he's done time.
Oh? For what?
Receiving stolen goods, Lieutenant.
Recently?
A couple of years ago he got out. Wouldn't be surprised if he still gets into a deal once in a while.
That's not his real name, is it, Nellie?
No, sir, it's a nickname. His name's Bevan. Nelson Bevan.
Uh-huh. Captain, could we borrow Weber to work with us tonight?
Oh, sure, Matt, if you need him.
I'd like to send him up there with either Cassidy or Goldman to look around for Nellie. Know where he lives, Weber?
No, sir, just where he hangs out.
All right, that's good enough. We'll find him.
Okay, Weber. Change into your civilian clothes. You got your work cut out for you.
You are listening to 21st Precinct, a factual account of the way police work in the world's largest city.
Men, we're offering you an opportunity to study the various operations and applications of the Mannheim slide rule. Well, perhaps this offer wouldn't appeal to the average clerk, journalist, or administrative specialist. But to the man engaged in technical or scientific work, it would mean something. If he were not already familiar with the Mannheim slide rule, he would be interested. He'd want to know how he could take advantage of the offer. He'd know that a working knowledge of the slide rule would be of considerable help to him in his job. He'd learn that the person to see is his education officer, who would tell him that the course in the application of the Mannheim type slide rule is offered by USAFI. He'd fill out an application to enroll in the course and take the first step toward power through knowledge with USAFI. Yes, he'd do that.
if he were smart.
Now back to 21st Precinct and Captain Frank Kennelly.
As instructed, Patrolman Weber changed to his civilian clothes to assist detectives in their search for Nelson Bevan, also known as Nelly. While Detective Goldman sought information on Nelly through other means, Patrolman Weber took Detective Cassidy to the bars where he thought Nelly was a regular patron. The proprietor of one place told the officers that Nelly was indeed a steady customer and that he came into the place late almost every afternoon between 5 and 5:30. The two officers took a booth in the back of the place and waited.
Sure beats walking the post.
Yeah, I guess it does.
Hey, Cassidy, how many years you got in the job?
12.
And in the brains?
Almost 9 now.
Yeah. How'd you make it?
Well, I made a good collar. I almost had my head blown off.
No kidding.
I was walking a post. It was late to a dark and cold. The only thing open on the block was this drugstore in the corner. I rang in for a personal. Well, I figured I'd go in there and warm up a little bit and maybe sneak a smoke. So I started into the drugstore. There were these two guys in there, and the doc had his hands high in the air.
Wow.
So I get out my gun. I don't ask any questions. They start shooting at me, and as soon as I come in the door. But I dropped one of them with my first shot and hit the other one with about the fourth or fifth. One of them was dead by the time the ambulance got there. The other's still in Sing Sing. Just got a letter from him last week.
That was some collar.
Yeah. Well, Commissioner Valentine showed up at the station house at 4:30 in the morning. Had me on the back and made me a detective on the spot. Mayor LaGuardia had me down to City Hall the next day. For tea.
Well, I'm trying to make it the other way. I'm going to Delahanty's now, studying for the sergeant's examination. That's Nellie.
Yeah?
He just stepped up to the bar. Brown overcoat.
Uh-huh. All right. Let's go talk to him.
Okay.
Keep it social for now. Let me spring it on him. Okay?
Okay, sure. Hello, Nellie.
Oh, how are you?
Patrolman Weber.
Sure, I know you. Patrolman Weber, sure. You're not working tonight, huh?
Yeah, I'm working.
No blue suit?
Not tonight. Nellie, this is Detective Cassidy.
Glad to know you.
Yeah.
Where you been keeping yourself, Nellie? I haven't seen you around.
Oh, busy. You know me, Mr. Weber, busy.
I understand you're in the general merchandise business, Nellie.
No, you got me wrong, Mr.
Cassidy. We've always got you guys wrong, huh?
I'm out of that business, Mr. Cassidy. I've been out a long time. Am I right, Mr. Weber? You know me.
Yeah, I know you, Nellie.
Hey, how about a drink? How about a drink on me?
No, thanks.
Well, if you don't mind. Skull.
Skull.
Nellie.
Yeah, Miss Cassidy?
Where's Dick?
Dick who?
The guy you spoke to in here Sunday night.
I don't know who you're talking about. I don't know any Dick.
Come on. Let's take a ride to the station house. We'll talk about it there.
Oh, Dick.
Yeah, yeah. Dick. Where is he?
I don't know where he is, fellas. Him and me are just strangers, practically. I was introduced to him just once, and I seen him here that night. What night was it?
Sunday.
Yeah, I seen him in here Sunday, and we had a few words.
About what?
Time of day. We just passed the time of day.
Is that all?
Yeah, you know. Hello, how are you? What's new? That's all.
Come on, Nelly.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Where is he?
I don't know where he is. That's the honest to goodness truth. I don't know a thing about him. I don't even know his last name. What do you want from me?
What did he want from you?
You know the kind of reputation I got. He had a ring and a watch he wanted to realize something out of. I told him I wasn't in that kind of business anymore, and that was that.
How did you meet him?
Some guy pointed him out to me.
What guy?
What guy? I don't know what guy. No million guys. Just one of those things. I was standing on 2nd Avenue one afternoon last week, and he walked up to me. He asked me to come over and sit in the car, so I did. He had these things he showed me, and I told him I didn't want any part of them. What, is this guy hot, Dick, this is Mr. Weber?
Burning.
Good thing I didn't have anything to do with him.
What kind of car?
It's a Hudson, I think. A tan Hudson. It's 49 or 50, something like that.
Well, that checks, Cassidy.
Everything I tell you checks. You know me, Mr. Weber.
Yeah.
You know me from way back.
Too far back.
Where is he?
I don't know. That's the honest to goodness truth.
Where does he hang around?
How should I know where he hangs around? All I know about him is what I told you. I've seen him only that twice. Once when he had the merchandise and once that Sunday night. I don't know him from Adam otherwise. I know nothing about him. You give me a stack of Bibles, I'll swear.
I still wouldn't believe you, Nellie.
You wouldn't?
Come on, let's go in.
Is that trip necessary?
Yeah.
Can I at least finish my drink?
Go ahead.
Well, skull again.
Skull, Nellie.
It was 5:45 p.m. when I signed the last report in my folder and put it in the letterbox with the other reports and communications to be picked up and taken by the precinct messenger to the 6th Division office at 160 East 35th Street. I got up from behind my desk and walked out into the muster room.
Yes, sir, Captain?
Go ahead, take the call.
Yes, sir.
21st Precinct, Sergeant Collins. Yeah, Coley. Listen, walk around and talk to the owner of that dress store at 613 before he closes. Remind him again to set his burglar alarm correctly. We don't want to make another run there during the night. Yeah, all right. Yes, sir, Captain.
I'm going to sign out, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Well, what time are you going out on patrol tonight?
Sergeant Rosen is going to relieve me on TS at 8 o'clock, sir.
All right. Take a turn by that ballroom on York Avenue sometime during the night. Make sure they've corrected the conditions we talked to the manager about, all right?
Yes, sir.
And leave a report for
yes,
me.
Yes, sir.
All right, Nellie. Step right up there.
Where, here?
That's all right.
Hello, Weber.
Captain.
Sergeant, would you bring up to Lieutenant King for me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, you found him, huh?
Yes, sir. What kind of job is finding me? Who was hiding?
Lieutenant King, sir.
Think I was the hottest guy in New York.
Yes, Cassidy's here. He wants to talk to you. Okay, Cassidy. Take it over there, huh?
Good job, Weber.
Thank you, Captain.
We got Nellie, Lieutenant. Yeah, downstairs.
He hasn't been much help to Cassidy, though. Who said I haven't? I can't tell him what I don't know. What do you want me to do, kid him?
Yes, sir. He's here.
I don't kid anybody.
Yes, sir. I'll ask him. Thanks, Sergeant.
Okay.
Captain, Lieutenant King wants to know if you've got a minute.
Well, what's the trouble?
I didn't say.
All right, I'll come up.
Okay, Nellie, let's go.
Pillar to post.
I'm going to the detective, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
So I get shoved around. Pillar to post.
We'll try to make it post to pillar, Nellie, just so things don't get dull.
We walked out of the muster room and into the back room where two motorcycle patrolmen from motorcycle precinct number one were sitting at the table, going over summons stubs preparatory to informing the desk officer of the summonses they had issued motorists in the 21st precinct. Then we climbed the rickety stairs to the second floor and walked into the 21st Squad office.
All right, Nellie. Sit down right there on the bench.
Listen, Mr. Cassidy, got any idea how long I'm going to be here?
Why?
Well, I got a business appointment.
What kind of business?
On a bench, huh?
Yeah.
Sit down. That's what you want. Captain, am I supposed to stay around here or do you want me back on my post?
Well, you see what Lieutenant King has to say, Weber.
Yes, sir.
Whatever he wants.
Hello, Captain. Thanks for coming up.
Oh, it's all right, man.
Weber, good job.
Thanks, Lieutenant.
Keep in there a minute, Cassidy.
Yes, sir.
Captain, is that Edith Hargrave?
Oh?
We checked out her prints. She's never been in trouble. I'm sure she's telling a straight story about this fellow, Dick.
Uh-huh.
Her boss called me. He says he knows you. A fellow named Audley runs a restaurant up on Lexington Avenue in the 80s.
Oh, yes, I know him.
She waits tables there. Audley said he'd vouch for her. What kind of a guy is he?
He's all right, man. Been in business there a long time. He's never had any trouble that I know of.
Uh-huh.
He's okay.
Edie, you remember Captain Kennelly?
When can I go? Can I go soon?
I will see. You'd know this, Nellie, if you saw him, would you?
I told you I would.
All right. Walk over to the door there. Let me know if you see him sitting outside.
Really? I want to go home.
See him?
Yes, on the bench. That fella. That's him.
All right. Cassidy, bring him in here.
Yes, sir.
Sit down, Edie.
Oh, excuse me, Captain.
Well, it's all right.
All right, Nellie. Inside.
Till the post.
Shut the door, Cassidy.
Yes, sir.
This is Lieutenant King and Captain Kennelly. Nellie Button.
Gentlemen. Know this young lady, Nellie?
She looks familiar, I'll say that.
She was with Dick on Sunday night when he met you.
Was she?
You know I was.
All right, Nellie, you can save yourself a lot of trouble. We want Dick and the guy he was with. We want them in a robbery this afternoon, and we think they're right for five or six more. Now, where is he?
I said I know where he is. I don't know him that well.
Look, mister, I don't want to waste any time with you. You told the officers he drives a 1949 or 50 Hudson painted tan. If you know that much, you know a lot more.
How can I know a lot more? I seen the car.
You know where he stays. He told you where he stays, didn't he?
No.
Well, where do you think he stays?
What, do you want me to speculate?
Yeah, speculate. We'll go from there.
Well, once in a conversation, he said he parked his car at nights near that museum over there. You know, on the west side, right off the park?
Museum of Natural History?
Yeah, that one.
So?
So if he parks his car there at night, he must stay around there someplace, don't you think?
I don't know what to think, Nellie. We'll see what we can find out.
The interrogation of Nelson Bevan, also known as Nellie, continued.
Meanwhile, Lieutenant King had Patrolman Weber take the girl, Edith Hargrave, to a restaurant for a meal. After listening to the questioning for some minutes, I went downstairs, signed the blotter, and left the precinct to go off duty. At the end of an hour, Lieutenant King had gotten no more information from Nellie on the whereabouts of the suspects. He concluded that Nellie knew no more. It was decided to trace the suspects by attempting to locate the car parked on the street in the vicinity of the Museum of Natural History, located on the west side of Central Park between 77th Street and 81st Street. Inasmuch as this location was out of the 21st, the commanders of both the 20th and 24th detective squads were called. Each furnished two detectives, and with four men from the 21st, the search of the streets began later that night. Because of his work on the case so far, Patrolman Weber continued temporarily as the partner of Detective Cassidy. Shortly before midnight, they were cruising on Columbus Avenue looking for a 1949 or 1950 Hudson painted tan.
Suppose we go up to the corner, take a right, and come back in the next block. Okay, Weber?
Yeah, sure.
We might be batting our brains out for nothing. Wouldn't be smart for them to hold out of that car any longer. I know we've got the girl.
You give them credit for being smart, leaving her in the bar like that, taking her along on a robbery.
Some of them get smart at strange times. Take a right, huh?
Hey, Cassidy, look up there.
Go on, straight through.
49 Hudson.
Pull up ahead of it.
Yeah.
Let's have a look.
I'm right with you.
Of course, I grant you that not everybody owns a Hudson, but there's a few of them around.
Yeah.
Fill the hood.
Warm.
We'll try the door. Uh-huh.
Well, what's the matter?
This could be the car. Girl said she remembered a little blue knob on the steering wheel, like that one. Whoever left it here must be coming back for it.
Yeah?
There's a bottle of whiskey under the seat. Half full, too.
Well, what now?
Suppose you ring in to Lieutenant King.
Yeah.
Tell him what we've got. I think it's a car. Ask him to check out the registration, see if there's an alarm out for the car.
Yeah, there's a candy store on the corner.
Good, use the phone in there. I'll keep my eyes on the car.
Okay.
Good evening.
Good evening, Pop.
Yes, sir, something?
Yeah, for the telephone, please.
For the telephone. Stay open all night, what do I get? The telephone customer. The telephone. On the wall.
Yeah, thanks.
Hey, what's that?
I'm a cop. Get help.
Hey, listen.
Cassidy! Cassidy?
Here. I'm the cop.
Get that one's gun.
How is he?
Through the neck.
I don't bother with that other one. I got his gun.
You hit?
Yeah. Not bad, I don't think.
Here, let me see.
In the shoulder, that's all. It came back as soon as you went inside. It started blazing away.
You sure handled him, though.
Yeah. Well, here I go again.
Tea with the mayor. First Precinct, Sergeant Collins. What is it? A kid? Who's the driver, you? He was what? Riding a bicycle?
And so it goes.
Where
around the clock, through the week, every right. day, every year. A police precinct in the city of New York is a flesh and blood merry-go-round. Anyone can catch the brass ring. Or the brass ring can catch anyone.
21st Precinct, transcribed, a factual account of the way the police work in the world's largest city, is presented with the official cooperation of the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association, an organization of more than 20,000 members of the Police Department, City of New York. Everett Sloan in the role of Captain Kennelly, Ken Lynch as Lieutenant King. Featured in tonight's cast were Elaine Rost, George Petrie, Jack Orison, Santos Ortega, Mandel Kramer, and Michael Dreyfuss. Written and directed by Stanley Niss. Art Hanna speaking.
This
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
And just for your information, the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service was the military's entertainment network that would take American radio shows in the old days and later television, of course, and make recordings of all these network programs and then send them overseas to Armed Forces radio and TV stations that were located around the bases. And if there was any activity going on, sometimes even in the field, like in World War II, the men out there could follow Bob Hope and Jack Benny and all the other regular shows that they liked right out there where they were fighting. And the Armed Forces Radio Service is still there, along with Armed Forces Television. Well, now that the history lesson is over, our second feature today for the police part of the program is Dragnet, the big phone call from 1952.
The story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all king-size cigarettes, brings you Dragnet on both radio and television.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a robbery detail. A jewelry salesman is slugged and robbed of $20,000 in precious stones. After months of investigation, you finally discover the man responsible for the holdup. You've got the evidence to prove him guilty. Your job, bring him in. Fatima, America's first, largest-selling blended cigarette. Now, best of all king-size cigarettes.
Prove it yourself, today. Compare Fatima with any other king-size cigarette.
One, Fatima's length filters the smoke 85 millimeters for your protection.
Two, Fatima's length cools the smoke for your protection.
Three, Fatima's length gives you those extra puffs, 21% longer than standard cigarette size.
And in Fatima, you get an extra mild and soothing smoke, plus the added protection of Fatima quality.
Definitely the best quality in its class, but the same price as the cigarette you are now smoking.
Buy Fatima in the bright, sunny yellow pack. Best of all, king-size cigarettes.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Thursday, July 18th. It was sultry in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Ed Jacobs. The boss is Captain Didion. My name's Friday. It was 1:35 p.m. when we got back to the city hall, the interrogation room.
Sit down, Mr. Garvey.
Yes, sir. You want to call the Captain Ed, let him know we're back?
Okay. Thanks. I'd still like to know what this is all about, Sergeant, dragging me down here in the middle of the day. I've got an office.
Just a minute, Mr. Garvey.
Yeah, I just got back. Mm-hmm. All of them?
Good.
Yeah, the interrogation room, right?
Did others check in yet?
Yeah, they're all back. Worked out fine.
Would you please explain what this is about, why you brought me down here?
We think you know why.
Well, I don't. I haven't any idea. You take me away from my store on a busy day. You put a police guard on it. You insist on bringing me down here. What's it all about? Tell me.
No, you tell us, Mr. Garvey.
Tell you about what?
The jewel robbery 9 months ago, that holdup.
What holdup? My store hasn't been robbed.
Talk about your friend, Thomas Ashley.
Ashley, what about him?
We think you remember it 9 months ago, parking lot back of the building down on 4th Street.
Oh, sure. Some hold-up man slugged him, stole his case of samples. I remember it now. Poor Tom, the thief made a big haul, didn't he?
Unset diamonds, $20,000 worth.
I remember it now. I don't think Tom's gotten over it yet. He was a jewelry salesman for the same company at the time, you know. Same company Tom was working for, I mean.
Yeah, we know all that.
Some of the big bosses thought Tom had a hand in it. They figured it was a put-up job. Nothing was further from the truth.
That's so.
Sure, I know Tom. He's a close friend of mine. He wouldn't be mixed up in a deal like that. Tom and I worked out of the same office for years. We've had him over the house for dinner. We've even been on vacations together. He's one of the most honest men I know.
You sure of all this, are you?
Well, of course I'm sure. And that isn't why you called me down here, is it? You don't think Tom had anything to do with that robbery, do you? You don't think he was in on it?
He had nothing to do with it. I think you know that as well as we do.
Then why am I here? There's nothing I can tell you about the holdup. Only what I heard from Tom, what I read in the newspaper.
No, you can tell us a lot more, Garvey. We didn't bring you here just past time of day.
Tom was slugged and his sample case of stones were taken. That's all I can tell.
You're a liar, mister.
What?
You engineered the whole thing. We know it, and so do you. Was this some kind of a joke? If it is, I think it's in very...
It's a long way from a joke, Garvey. You planned the job, you got the loot. We can give you chapter and verse.
I really think you're serious. You think I robbed Tom?
We're past the thinking stage, Garvey. We already told you. We know you robbed him.
Now, wait a minute. This thing is ridiculous. The whole idea is ridiculous. I don't know who gave you the so-called information on me, but it's wrong. There's nothing further from the truth.
Nobody gave us the information. We got it ourselves.
You're really serious, are you? I robbed Tom, and you can prove I did.
You're getting the idea.
I don't know what to say. It's fantastic. I robbed my best friend Tom Ashley 9 months ago. I have $20,000 worth of diamonds, and you can prove it.
Every bit of it. What about it?
I think you're out of your mind. My name's George Garvey. Are you sure I'm the man you want? There couldn't be a mistake.
No, there's no mistake.
This thing would be funny if I didn't think you were serious. Let me ask you just one question. Maybe that'll clear it up for you.
Yeah?
If I held up Tom Ashley, how is it he didn't recognize me?
You know better than that, Garvey.
What?
You didn't hold up Tom Ashley yourself. You had someone do it for you.
Oh, well, cloak and dagger, huh? I'm afraid this is getting a little too wild for me, Sergeant. Maybe you can waste time making ridiculous charges. I can't. I'm going back to my store.
It's a weak bluff, mister. It's not going to do it.
Excuse me. Are you sure you two men haven't been drinking?
Sit down, Mr. Garvey.
I told you, I'm going back to my store.
Sit down.
Look, you have no right to keep me here. These are ridiculous charges. You think I'm one of those cheap hoodlums you're used to dealing with?
No, now come off it, mister. You've got a $5,000 car and a $40,000 home. That doesn't reach you a special treatment. You're a thief, and you know it as well as we do.
I don't have to take this from you.
You haven't got much choice. We just finished 5 months' legwork proving it.
Proving what?
All right, now sit down there. You engineered that holdup. We know who you got to do it. We know how it was carried out. We know how you planned on disposing of the diamonds. We know who your fence was. We know what the split was. We know what you did with part of the money. We know how much you got left.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
What can I say? I don't even know what you're talking about.
Any way you want it, Mr. Garvey.
Maybe you'd like to tell me why I did all this.
You know it better than we do.
No, I mean it. Tell me.
You weren't making enough money at your job to suit yourself, suit your wife either.
That's pretty good. Marilyn would get a big kick out of that.
All right, fella. We can wait it out as long as you want. We spent 9 months on this already. Another few days aren't going to make that much difference.
Just as a matter of curiosity, how'd you first start off on this tangent? Whatever gave you the idea that I had anything to do with the holdup?
When you started to spend money. New car, new office for yourself, fur coat for your wife, transferred your two children to that private school.
And that makes a holdup man out of me because I wanted to send my kids to a better school?
Where'd the money come from? Can you explain that?
Don't you think that's my business, Sergeant, where I get my money, what I do with it?
Not when you get it stealing.
I'm afraid you're going just a little too far. You insist I'm a thief. I'm going to insist you prove it.
All right. Have a look over here, Mr. Garvey.
Yeah?
Some of the reports on the investigation. Reams of them. They cover everything from the time of the jewel robbery up to late yesterday. It's all right there. Everything from the crime report to signed statements.
Well, how would that concern me?
3/4 of the stuff concerns you. Have a look for yourself.
I still can't get it straight in my mind. What makes you think I had anything to do with that robbery?
You know what this is, Mr. Garvey, this machine right here?
No. Some kind of recording apparatus?
That's right. It's a tape recorder.
You've been taking down this conversation, then why?
No, not this one. We've been recording every conversation that took place in your office for the last 4 months, every word.
What do you mean?
Just that, Mr. Garvey. Every time you talked on the phone, every visitor you had, it's all down on tape, 25 reels of it.
Interesting. Is that supposed to frighten me?
No, no, we don't care if it frightens you or not. Something else here.
Yes?
Reports on what you've been doing for the last 4 months. Daily reports, every movement you made.
That's so.
Everywhere you went, everybody you talked to, everything you did. Want to hear a sample?
This must be some kind of a joke. That's the only explanation I can think of.
May 12th, Thursday. Sergeants Bitteroff and Rafferty. Those are the two officers who were tailing you at the time. You checked in at your new office at 9:38 a.m. At 10:03 a.m., you had a visitor, Kenneth Tyson. You talked to him in your office. Conversations recorded. Tyson left at 10:18 a.m. At 10:32 a.m., you left your office.
If you're trying to impress me, I'm afraid it isn't working out very well.
You care for a cigarette, Garvey?
No, thanks. I have my own.
All right.
Well, I've wasted enough time. Exactly what's the point of all this?
Pretty simple. You're responsible for a robbery. We can prove it. We're giving you the chance to make a statement.
It's nonsense.
Is it?
Of course. People following me, checking everything I do, where I spend my money, where I send my kids to school. What's it all about? It doesn't make any sense.
All right, Mr. Garvey, we've said it before. We can wait it out as long as you want.
Look, let's get this thing straight. Let's go back to the beginning and take it step by step.
That's fine.
The holdup was last fall, wasn't it? Sometime in October?
October 7th, Monday, 5:20 in the afternoon.
All right, now just what am I supposed to have done? None of your vague references about a new coat for my wife or where I send my kids to school. Let's have some facts.
Joe?
All right, Mr. Garvey. You went to work as a jewelry salesman for the company 10 years ago. Your friend Tom Ashley, the victim, started the same year. The two of you have been pretty close friends.
That's right. I told you that.
I will skip the rest of your background for now. 2 weeks before the robbery on September 24th, you had a meeting with a Kenneth Tyson. You met in the cafeteria on South Broadway. Tyson's 19 years old, lives with an older sister. He works in a gas station on Olympic Boulevard. He's done some work in your car for you. That's how you happen to know him.
Yes, I think I remember the boy. I don't know him well, though. I don't recall the meeting either.
No, you know the boy very well. At the time of the meeting, you promised him $1,000 if he'd hold up your friend, Tom Ashley.
Ridiculous.
Tyson agreed to it, and you briefed him on the plan. The following day, you gave him a gun. 32 caliber Smith & Wesson, serial number 362744.
Nonsense. Where did you get that information?
Tyson.
Well, he's lying. Believe me, if he told you that, he's lying. Is he the one who robbed Tom?
October 7th, at your direction, he was in the parking lot behind the Hunter Crosswell building. Tom Ashley came out to get in his car. He had his case of sample diamonds with him. Tyson held him up, slugged him, took the stones, and got away.
Of course, it's obvious. Tyson's trying to say I put him up to it. He's trying to get out of it that way.
Afraid not, Mr. Garvey. Boy couldn't have carried off the holdup by himself.
Well, of course he could. It's obvious he's trying to cover up.
There were six people in the company you worked for who knew that on Mondays, Ashley always took the case of sample diamonds along when he made his calls. Only on Monday, you were one of the people who knew that.
I suppose you've considered the other five people.
They were all checked out at the time. They were all cleared. You along with them.
But I'm not clear anymore, is that it? This young hoodlum Tyson, you're willing to take his word over mine?
After the robbery, he took the case of diamonds to you. That was the next day. You paid him $500 and promised him the other $500 when he got rid of the stones.
Oh, I suppose I've gotten rid of them, or do I still have them?
2 months after the holdup, he contacted a fence up in San Francisco. He drove up there and sold him some of the stones, and he broke them up and sold them. We know who he sold them to. We know what he got for them.
Well, this fence, he's supposed to be another good friend of mine?
He's still doing business with him. His name's Fred Lawrence.
It's a new one on me. I don't know any Fred Lawrence. Can't even recall the name.
Now, maybe this will help you, Mr. Garvey. Listen to him on the tape recorder. It's reel 4, isn't it, Ed?
Yeah, I think so. They're all labeled there right on the back of the box.
Yeah, here we are.
Well, what's all this about?
Phone conversation, Mr. Garvey. One of the things we recorded from your office. I told you about it before. Let's see. This one was on March 18th.
I always thought wiretapping was against the law, or do you pay any attention to that?
You didn't tap your telephone line. We recorded everything from dictographs we installed in your store and back in your office. They started recording the day you moved in. That was the 1st of March, wasn't it?
I don't know why you're telling me. I can sue you for that, you know. I can sue you for your last dollar.
All we're concerned with right now is Fred Lawrence. You say you don't know him. Why can't you listen to this? This was recorded March 18th in your office. Okay? Here we go.
Yeah, Marion. Mr. Lawrence?
Yeah, sure. Put him on.
Hi, Fred. How are you?
I'm good.
No, everything's fine. No heat at all.
Tyson? No, he's all right. Believe me, he's a good kid.
Nice.
All right, where?
I don't know. It might not be so good if you sleep down here.
Only 8 o'clock, 8:30.
Okay, fine. Suppose 8:30 is your minute.
Bye, Fred.
Bye.
Mr. Garvey, you recognize that? How about it, Garvey?
I understand they can do clever things with tape recorders nowadays. There's a way of piecing words together, isn't there? They can record your voice and then fix the tape, take a simple sentence and change the words around to mean just the opposite.
You can examine the tape if you like. We didn't make a splice in it. All you'll find are the usual factory splices, just the way it comes from the manufacturer.
Well, what difference does it make anyway? There's nothing criminal about that conversation, nothing at all.
You told us a few minutes ago you didn't know Fred Lawrence. You never heard of him on that recording. It sounds like you know him pretty well.
It's a fairly common name, wouldn't you say? Must be quite a few Fred Lawrences. I didn't happen to remember the name right off.
How about Tyson?
What?
Tyson. You told us you didn't know him well at all.
I don't.
Well, it didn't sound that way on that tape, did it? You were telling Lawrence that he was all right. You said, believe me, he's a good kid. Now, what you said, now, how about it, mister?
How about what? Is this some kind of a frame? What are you trying to make me say?
We're not going
to
make you say anything, Garvey. We work robbery detail. That's the job, robberies. They pay us to clean them up.
I can pay you.
What?
Never mind, I didn't mean that. I meant I pay my taxes, I pay your salaries, I help to anyway. I don't know why I have to be treated like this.
No reason to make a big headache out of this for anybody, Garvey. Now, you engineered a holdup. We can prove that. We're giving you a chance to make a statement. That's all we want here.
I've got nothing to say. Make a statement about what? All you're going on is hearsay, circumstantial evidence. You can't say I planned that, Robert.
Well, you admit you know Tyson, you know him well.
I don't. I admit nothing.
What about phone conversation?
A fake. They're phoning those things up all the time. You know it as well as I do.
You admitted you know Fred Lawrence. We proved that from the recording.
I admit nothing.
You don't even know Tyson. Is that what you want to say?
I know him, that's all. He worked on my car a couple of times. I don't know him well.
All right, sir. I'd like to play you another recording.
It's a waste of time. I haven't got the whole day to spend here. I got to get back to my store. I've got a business to operate.
Well, this won't take very long. Yeah, here we are. April 5th.
It's a lot of foolishness anyway. How do I know you made those recordings? You could have gotten accurate. Maybe you made them up yourself. There weren't any dictographs. You make those things.
There were dictographs, Mr. Garvey. Remember before you moved into that new suite of offices, you had them redecorated?
Yeah.
There were sound technicians from our crime lab out there working side by side with the painters and carpenters. Installed dictographs in your store and back in your offices. They bugged the entire place.
Wiretapping. I'll bring this into court if it's the last thing I do.
Look, now, we already told you, Mr. Garvey, it's not wiretapping. We didn't touch your phone lines. We didn't have to.
It's an invasion of privacy. I'm going to take this into court.
Yeah, well, let's listen to this recording. It might clear up a few things.
Clear up what? What are you trying to prove?
Okay, Joe.
Yeah, it's coming in here now. Date on this is April 5th.
Yeah, Mary. Who? Tyson? Well, does he know I'm in? Yeah, okay, send him back. Yeah, come on in.
Hi, Mr. Garvey.
Ken, yeah, how are you? Come on in, sit down.
Thanks.
Well, how you doing anyway?
Pretty good. Trying to get a hold of you last week, it's so hard to do, you know, I didn't very much.
Pretty busy, yeah, Ken. The time of year, you know, it keeps you going.
No, I don't want to waste any time. I'd like to know how the deal's working out, though. Going back east to Albany next month. I'd like to get the rest of my money if I could.
Well, just like I told you the last time, Ken, I'm sending the stuff north. I hope to hear in a couple of days.
Yeah, I know. That's what you told me before. It was a pretty heavy job. I could use the money. I mean, if it wasn't so heavy, I wouldn't mind, but I got it coming, I think. Huh?
Of course you do, Ken. There's no question there. It's just that I haven't got it right now. Believe me, you'd have it in a minute if it was mine again.
Yeah, but that was the agreement, wasn't it? $500 before the job, $500 after, and have them last October. That's a pretty good stretch.
Now, look, Ken, I told you the truth. I just haven't got it. Now, why don't you drop back in a week or so?
How about it, Mr. Garvey? What do you say to that?
It's ridiculous, that's all. It's an obvious fake.
You can look at the tape if you like, inspect it. You can check every one of those 25 reels. We'll play every one of them for you if you want.
Fakes, and they're bad ones at that. Now, look, I'll give you both a chance. Either you book me in on a charge or else release me. You try booking me in and I'll sue you for false arrest. I'll break you. I'll sue you blind. I can promise you that.
Uh-huh.
Release me and I'll get back to work. I'll forget all about it. Now, you name it. Which one? Book me in or release me?
Oh, that's fair enough. You're going to give us a choice, huh?
You bet it's fair. You could get in a lot of hot water. Now, it's up to you. Which one?
You ran a bad bluff, mister.
What?
We're booking you in.
You are listening to Dragnet, authentic stories of your police force in action. Compare Fatima with any other king-size cigarette.
One, Fatima's length filters the smoke 85 millimeters for your protection.
Two, Fatima's length cools the smoke for your protection.
Three, Fatima's length gives you those extra puffs, 21% longer than standard cigarette size.
And in Fatima, you get an extra mild and soothing smoke, plus the added protection of Fatima quality.
To show our confidence in Fatima, we make this money-back guarantee to every king-size cigarette smoker.
Buy a pack of Fatimas. Enjoy Fatima quality, extra mildness, and superbly blended tobaccos.
If you're not convinced Fatima is better than the king-size cigarette you're now smoking, just return the pack and the unsmoked Fatimas before August 1st, 1952, and we'll give you your money back plus postage. Fatima, Box 37, New York 1.
Remember, each king-size Fatima gives you an extra mild and soothing smoke, plus the added protection of Fatima quality.
Switch to Fatima today. Best of all, king-size cigarettes.
Thursday, 3:55 p.m. Ed Jacobs and I continued questioning the robbery suspect, Ernest Garvey. Despite the evidence at hand, he still refused to admit any knowledge of the $20,000 jewel theft 9 months before. The questioning went on. Garvey's answers became more and more confused. We kept pressing, laying out the case against him step by step. 4 p.m., 4:30. We stayed at it.
You must have taken quite a bit of money, didn't you, Garvey? A wife's new fur coat, new car for yourself. Where'd he come from?
Now, look, there has to be an answer. Where'd that money come from?
Simple. I borrowed it.
Where'd you borrow it?
Some from friends, some from the bank. So I don't see how it concerns you.
How much money did you borrow?
Don't you think that's my business?
Wasn't it about $7,000? Is that about right?
Yeah. No, it was more. Well, what's the difference? It's my business.
You want to grab that folder, Ed? The one with the dark brown. That's it.
Got it.
Complete financial file on you, Mr. Garvey. Took us quite a few weeks getting this together. A lot of work.
You must like snooping in other people's affairs.
No, not especially. It's pretty dull.
Here's a copy of your bank statement. It's photostat. It doesn't make much sense.
What do you mean?
Well, we checked your income for that month. Amounted to $620.18. Your bank statement here shows you made deposits totaling $760 the same month. Now, how is that possible?
Well, for your information, I made a loan that month. That's probably some of the loan money I deposited. I quit my old job that time. I was going in business for myself. I needed the money to redecorate the new store and the office. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. The photostat's your loan papers right here. The loan was for $2,000.
That's
a month
right.
Before that, February, you'd borrowed from another bank. Let's see, for $3,000. Made another one in April, too. That was for $1,500, different bank again.
That's right. Do we have to go over this line by line?
In 3 months, you made bank loans for $6,500. Besides that, in the same 3 months, you earned a total of $1,713.88. Together, that makes $8,213.88.
What's the point?
Copies of your bank statements, Garvey. You have 5 different savings accounts in 5 different banks. They show from February to April, the same 3 months, you made deposits of more than $11,000. Now, how do you explain that?
Garvey, any explanation?
It's almost 5 o'clock. Can I use a phone? I have to call my wife and let her know.
All right. We'll have to listen in on the extension. Conversation's going to be mine.
Go ahead. I don't care.
Okay. Dial 9 to get an outside line.
Oh,
you want to give us an explanation? You only had $8,200. How could you bank $11,000? It had to come from somewhere, didn't it?
Purely a personal matter, that's all. I borrowed $3,000 from a brother of mine who lives back in Minnesota.
You'd already made 3 loans. Why'd you have to borrow from your brother? You mind telling us?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I do.
Well, that still doesn't balance the books, Mr. Garvey. You earned and borrowed $8,200. You got another $3,000 from your brother, you say. That's $11,200. You banked $11,000.
Yes, that's right. Do you always have to repeat?
That'd leave you with $200. You and your family live for 3 months on $200, is that
it? Why not? That could easily be. A lot of people do it.
Yes, sir, but not your family.
I'm getting sick and tired of this. You're trying to tell me you know my family better than I do, what they eat, what they spend, what it takes to support them?
We've been on this thing for 9 months, Garvey. We've put in a lot of hours. We know your family pretty well. If you'd like, I'll tell you the last time you ordered steak from the meat market, when you paid your gas bill, the last time your wife bought a pair of shoes.
I guess this is standard procedure for you, huh? Threatening people?
We're not threatening you, Mr. Garvey. We're giving you facts.
Here's another file here. It took us over a month to get this one together. Complete record of your expenses from February 1st. Covers February, March, April, May, June.
I hope the police department has a good lawyer, Sergeant. You've got a fair warning.
You say you and your... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I hope the police department has a good lawyer, Sergeant. You've got fair warning. I'm going to sue you for your last dollar.
Now, you say you and your family lived 3 months on $200. That doesn't jive with what we've got here. Take a look if you want to. It's
lies, forgeries. It's all lies. I promise you.
Photostat of the receipt for your wife's coat, Garvey. $1,612.34. That includes the tax paid in full. Photostat of the contract for your new car. Down payment, $2,000. Liquor bill for the big party you threw in March. March 20th. Liquor bill, $387. Catering bill, $194. Full year's check for tuition, room and board for your kids at the private school you sent them to. $1,864.07. Well, that's only the beginning, Garvey. Comes to a lot more than $200. Have you heard enough?
I better try to get my wife again. I have to let her know.
Ed, you handle the extension,
will you? Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
Dial 9 to get outside, Garvey.
Yeah, I know.
She'll get through.
Gabbing on the phone all day long. Gab on the phone and play cards. That's all she ever does.
Got some more figures here for you, Garvey. Be a good idea if you hear them. Bills for 2 more parties you threw last month. Food bills.
Why do you have to keep pushing that stuff at me? So you've been sneaking around, finding out about my personal affairs. That's supposed to be good police work, is it? This is the
kind
of
you carried off a robbery, Garvey. We're giving you a chance to make a statement. I told
you. Why should I? What for? Give you a statement, have you twisted around, incriminate me? I haven't had anything to do with this kid Tyson. I better try that call.
Yeah, well, dial 9 first.
I know. You told me.
Matter.
What's the matter with her? Stupid. She ought to know I'm trying to get her.
What's the matter, Garvey? Don't forget dial 9.
I don't want to hear it.
I'll just play a piece. I think you ought to hear it.
That's the same reel there. Just fan it over there to that other part, Ed.
All right. Tyson, Mr. Garvey, same place, the office.
But you told me on the phone, you said you'd have the dope for me today. You said today, sure.
Now, wait a minute, Tyson. I didn't say that at all. I said maybe I'd have it for you. I didn't say definitely. Look, I can't give you what I haven't got.
I want the 500, Garvey. I need it. I stuck my neck out on a robbery job. I get five to life.
All right, Ed.
You
couldn't be any plainer. Now, what do you say?
Wait a minute, just a minute.
Dial 9.
Satisfied. She never could be satisfied. Always more. She always had to have something else.
How do you mean, your wife?
Playing cards, gabbing on the phone, that's all. She just kept writing me day in, day out. I wasn't making enough money. She didn't have any clothes. Kids ought to go to a better school. We ought to have a new house. On and on. I ought to go in business for myself, make money, lots of money. Same thing, all the time. Talk, talk, talk. There's only so much you can take.
You figured the robbery would solve the problem, is that it?
Guess so. I would have tried anything just to shut her up, get her off my back for a while. I guess you got Tyson out, the other man too, Fred Lawrence.
Yeah, they were picked up this afternoon. Lawrence at the airport, Tyson and the show downtown, all three, all at the same time.
What about your wife, Garvey? She knew you planned this robbery.
Oh, I didn't tell her. I think she knows, though. Pretty sure she does. Maybe she'll be satisfied now. The lousy money, she had to have it. Didn't even leave me enough to pay off that kid Tyson. Private school for the children, wall-to-wall carpets in the house, new dishwasher, new coat, new car, everything. She just had to have them. You want to take me, book me in? I don't care.
All right. We'll stop off down the hall and take your statement.
Sure, I don't care.
All right, let's go.
Hey, just a minute, huh?
Yeah.
It'll only take a minute.
The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On November 4th, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 87, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial.
And now, here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you, George Fenneman. Friends, I make it a habit to carry two packs if Fatima's around with me. One's for my smoking, and the second one's for smokers I see with other king-size cigarettes. All I have to say is, here, compare Fatima. I know they're going to be sold on Fatimas the next time we meet. How about comparing Fatima yourself? You'll find Fatima's length filters the smoke 85 millimeters, cools the smoke, all for your protection. You get those extra puffs because Fatima is 21% longer than standard cigarette size. And Fatima gives you an extra mild and soothing smoke, plus the added protection of Fatima quality. Prove it today. Buy Fatima.
Ernest W. Garvey and Kenneth Tyson were tried and convicted of first-degree robbery, one count, and received sentences as prescribed by law. Fred Lawrence was tried and convicted of receiving stolen property, one count. First-degree robbery is punishable by imprisonment from 5 years to life. Receiving stolen property is punishable by a prison term of not more than 5 years. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Heard tonight were Barney Phillips, Vic Perrin, and Eddie Firestone. Script by Jim Moser. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
For
Fatima Cigarettes. Best of all, king-size cigarettes has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles.
February 18th, hear the Gala City Service Silver Radio Jubilee on NBC.
And those are the famous NBC chimes indicating that the program is over, and so it was. Dragnet and the Big Phone Call from February 14th of 1952. You know, the Radio Theater Channel is on the air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all throughout the year at oldtimeradiolisten.com, and there you'll find us streaming with a full selection of programs, all your favorites. In fact, all the big shows of old time radio, and in excellent sound. So if you like this podcast, you're going to love the Radio Theater Channel, oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, as mentioned earlier, time for some comedy. This time, Dennis Day is going to entertain us, and Dennis helps Mr. Witherby obtain a bank loan. This is from 1947.
The Dennis Day Show with Barbara Eiler, B. Benaderet, Dink Trout, John Brown, Charles Dant in the orchestra, and yours truly, Vern Smith, is written by Frank Galen and stars our popular young singer in A Day in the Life of Dennis Day. Here's Dennis to sing I'll Dance at Your Wedding.
You'll soon be walking down the aisle with someone by your side. The bells will ring, the choir will sing, the groom will kiss the bride. Oh, what a day that's gonna be, they'll come from everywhere. And when they play, oh, promise me, I promise I'll be there. I'll dance at your wedding, I'll dance at your wedding, I'll dance at your wedding, I'll have a wonderful time. I'll drink to your father, I'll drink to your mother, then I'll have another for auld lang syne. I'll kiss all the ladies, the young and old, and then I'll have myself another drink and kiss them all again. I'll dance at your wedding, I won't miss that wedding. I'll dance at your wedding, am I gonna shine at your wedding and mine? I'll drink to your father, I'll drink to your mother, then I'll have another for auld lang syne. I'll kiss all the ladies, the young and old, and then I'll have myself another drink and kiss them all again. I'll dance at your wedding, I won't miss that wedding. I'll dance at your wedding, am I gonna shine at your wedding and mine?
Colgate Dental Cream cleans your breath while it cleans your teeth. No other toothpaste does a better job of cleaning teeth than Colgate Dental Cream. For Colgate Dental Cream has a safe polishing agent that cleans your teeth both gently and thoroughly, brings out their natural sparkle and beauty. You can actually see and feel the difference. And scientific tests prove that Colgate Dental Cream cleans your breath while it cleans your teeth. Yes, actual scientific tests prove conclusively that in 7 out of 10 cases, Colgate instantly stops unpleasing breath that originates in the mouth. Colgate Dental Cream is famous for its wonderful wake-up flavor, too. Nationwide tests of leading toothpastes prove that Colgate's is preferred for flavor over every other brand tested. Yes, preferred over every other brand tested. And no wonder, for Colgate Dental Cream is the result of constant effort to produce the finest toothpaste in the world today. For cleaning teeth, for flavor, for sweetening breath. So see if you don't agree with the millions who have made Colgate Dental Cream America's favorite toothpaste. Try Colgate Dental Cream to bring out the natural sparkle and beauty of your teeth for a wake-up flavor you'll thoroughly enjoy. And always use Colgate Dental Cream after you eat and before every date to clean your breath while you clean your teeth. Well,
Well, one of the pleasant things about Christmas shopping is the pause for refreshment afterwards. And in Weaverville, the favorite spot for that is a recently opened little place featuring a gypsy fortune teller and called, with great originality, the Little Gypsy Tea Room. We find a familiar trio occupying one of the tables this afternoon. There's Herbert Anderson, his daughter Mildred, and our young hero, Dennis Day, all waiting for the gypsy to unveil to them the mysteries of the future.
Gee, it's sure swell of you to take Mildred and me out to tea, Mr. Anderson.
Oh, well, we only live once, my boy. I'm glad you're enjoying yourselves.
Oh, we are, Daddy. But how did you ever manage to get the money for it?
Well, I'm afraid I did something a little unethical. I promise you won't tell.
Oh, of course we won't. But what did you do?
I got up earlier than Poopsie this morning and went through my pants pockets.
Gee, I bet you hereafter she keeps the money in her own pants. Oh, I forgot they have no pockets.
You did it, Daddy. Golly, I can't wait to hear our fortunes. Can you, Dennis?
Well, gosh, I don't know. I'm a little scared of what she'll tell me.
Well, why? Have you had your fortune told before?
Yeah, I dropped a penny in a scale one day and a card came out saying, you weigh 153. Now turn over this card and read your future.
And what was on the back of the card?
Just one word. Boy.
In a silly sidewalk scale. Princess Romagna's a real gypsy. She knows the truth.
Look, she's free now, Dennis. Call her over.
Okay. Yoo-hoo, Princess Romagna. Over here, please.
How do you do? You are desirous of consulting with the gypsy?
Yes. We'd like our fortunes told, Princess.
Certainly, dearie. Would you like just your immediate future, or can I interest you in something from the cradle to the grave?
Well, whatever you see in our tea leaves.
All right. Let's have your cup, dearie. Oh, my, I seem to see a man in your life. Is that correct?
Oh, yes, it is.
He's dark, handsome, very distinguished looking, and terribly intelligent.
Oh, isn't she wonderful, Dennis?
What's so wonderful? She was looking right at me.
Tell me, Gypsy, are we going to be married someday?
Yeah. And look, do you see the four little specks of tea leaves at the side of the cup? That means you're going to have four children.
Pardon me, but one of those little specks is a fly.
So one of the children will be born in an aeroplane.
Oh, isn't that romantic? Now you, Daddy.
But I wasn't drinking tea, Mildred. All I had was a cup of coffee and a cigar.
Well, that's okay. I do just as well with ashes. Flick a few toward Mecca.
No, I don't want to know my future. I'm content to just let my little poopsie push me toward it.
Okay, let's have your cup, Sonny.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Here you are.
Thank you. Let's see now. Oh, my, what's this? The leaf says there's going to be a big change in your life.
Gosh, really?
Yeah, and soon. Maybe even this very day. Or tomorrow.
Oh, Dennis, isn't that marvelous?
Boy, I'll say. Are you sure, Gypsy?
Positive. Kismet is about to take a hint.
Gosh, and I never even met the fellow.
Kismet means fate, son.
Oh, can you see any more in the leaves, Gypsy? Can you tell me what I'm
gonna... I'm sorry, but that is all the leaves reveal, Sonny. And now I have other customers, so if you'll kindly cross my palm.
Yes, of course, Gypsy. I have some silver right here to cross it with.
Silver? Look, let's get all the way across, shall we, with some of that stuff that bends?
Oh, yes. Well, here you are now. Thank you, Princess.
Shalom aleichem, I'm sure. Goodbye.
Gosh, just think my whole life's going to be changed. I may even have a completely new personality, huh?
Well, it's possible, I guess.
Boy, come on. I can hardly wait for tonight to come so I can go to bed and wake up in the morning and meet myself.
Well, so you finally got home.
Oh, hi, Mother.
Oh, evening, Mrs. Anderson.
Hello, Butterball.
Oh, Mother, we had the most...
That can wait, Mildred. You and your father step outside for a moment. I have a few words to say to this young man here. Alone.
Me?
Yes, you.
We'll see you later, Dennis. Come on, Daddy.
Mildred, if Kismet shows up, send him right in. I think I'm going to need him.
Dennis, I'll come right to the point. Do you know that my patience with you is exhausted?
Well, I knew that in my case it tired very quickly, but what have I done lately?
Are you aware that your room rent is 2 weeks overdue?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I realized it last night when I noticed that my bed was missing.
Dennis, I've strung along with you in the past because I hoped you'd change.
Yes, ma'am, I know.
But look at you. The same $8 a week job. The same miserable prospects. The same lame excuses about the rent for 2 years. You're even wearing the same sweatshirt you wore the day you came here. Is there anything to recommend you?
Not unless you admire consistency.
Well, I don't. I want my $12 or out you go.
But gee, Mrs. Anderson, how can you feel that way? It's almost Christmas time. The very air in this house should be filled with the Christmas spirit.
Well?
I can breathe it for $12, huh?
Exactly. And you've heard my last word on the subject.
Well, well, so this is Kismet. Gee, I can't wait for the next wonderful change in my life. I wonder what it'll be. Appendicitis or athlete's foot?
That you, Dennis?
Yes, sir. Good morning, Mr. Willoughby.
Good morning. I've been waiting for you, son. I have something to tell you. And it's rather big news, my boy.
Big news? You mean, is it something that will change my whole life, is it?
It's just that, my boy.
Kismet, at last! At last!
Eh?
Quick, what is it? Tell me the glorious news. Quick, quick, quick!
Well, starting Monday morning, you'll be out of a job.
Huh?
That's right. I'm selling the store, son, so of course I'll have to let you go.
How could that Kismet turn out to be such a stinker?
I'm sorry, son, but you know I've always wanted a ranch out west. And now that I've found a rich young sucker to buy the store, I can have one at last.
Oh, I see. Well, Mr. Willoughby, this new owner, couldn't you recommend that he keep me on here?
Dennis, he's a member of my lodge. I couldn't do that to a fellow bald eagle.
Oh.
Besides, he's giving me $8,000 for this place. That's enough of a beating.
Gosh, $8,000?
Yes, exactly the price of the ranch I'm buying. Of course, I did want another place at $12,000, but unfortunately the bank turned down my application for a loan.
Your credit is no good?
Well, as a storekeeper, yes, but not as a rancher. They said unless I had someone in with me who knew all about ranching, they... Hey.
What?
Son, how would you like to be my brother Clarence?
I think I'd hate it.
I mean just long enough to go over to the bank and tell them that you're my brother from out west. That you know all about cattle ranching and that you're going to run my place for me. Then they'll give me the money for the ranch I really want.
But Mr. Willoughby, isn't that a little sneaky?
Certainly not. I'll pay back the loan. Do you think they call me Honest Homer Willoughby for nothing?
Yes, sir.
Well, they don't. Now, look, Dennis, if you can put this over for me, I'll see that the new owner keeps you on.
Gee, do you mean it?
I do. And what's more, you'll get a $5 raise.
$5? Boy, you spend other people's money like it was other people's money, don't you?
Well, naturally. Now, run over to that costume place and get yourself a Western outfit and a handlebar mustache. Then hop right down to the bank and get to work on Mr. Courtney, okay?
Yeah, I guess I haven't got much choice.
Fine. And remember, you're no longer Dennis Day.
I'm not?
Of course not. You're my brother Clarence.
Oh, that's right. Gee, I hope when Kismet comes up with my permanent change, I'll come from a better family.
Yes? Mr. Willoughby to see me? No, tell him I... Hmm? Oh, his brother. All right, Miss Flood, have him come in. That's funny. I didn't know Willoughby.
Well,
suppose I might as well see him. Come in.
Howdy there, partner. I'm from the land of the Golden West, out way yonder there. Willoughby's my handle, Saddle Sore Willoughby of the B-Bar H.
You don't say.
I sure do, partner. What say we hunker down by the farm and palaver a spell, hey?
Well, I have no far, but you can hunker down in that chair if you care. I'm sure you'll find it comfortable.
Thank you. You're right. This is darn good hunkering.
Good. Now, what's on your mind, Mr. Willoughby?
Well, it's about my brother Homer's loan, partner. Guess he didn't tell you I was going to run his ranch for him, hey?
He never even told me he had a brother, much less one that knew ranching. Why didn't he say something about it yesterday?
Settle back, son. I'm ready for that one. You see, he never knew until today that he had a brother.
What? Weren't you raised together?
Sure, but you know how close-mouthed us Western folks are. Ma just never told him who I was.
Didn't it ever occur to him to ask her?
Us Willoughbys ain't the nosy kind, Bub.
I find that story very hard to believe, Mr. Willoughby.
Well, give it everything you got, partner. It's the best I can do.
So you claim to be an experienced cattle rancher, eh?
You bet. Been a-raising and a-selling cattle since I was born. My pa had the biggest cattle ranch in all of Wyoming.
Oh? How many head did he have?
Why, one, of course, same as me.
I'm talking about heads of cattle.
Oh.
How many did he sell in an average year?
Oh, he didn't sell them that away, son. You had to take the whole animal, feet and everything.
Look, saddle sore. When we speak of a head of cattle, we're talking about the entire animal.
You don't say.
It's a fact. Now, how many head of cattle did your father have on this ranch of his?
Oh, shucks, partner. I never could count them. We had about 1,000 cows and as many calves.
And how many bulls?
None. We figured bulls was too vicious, so all we had was cows.
Well, that's not a bad trick if you can work it.
You need, huh?
No, but I don't think you can. No, brother, are you a faker?
Hold on there, partner. Smile when you say that or I'll stick you good with my cowpoke.
With your... with your cowpoke? Oh, this is murder.
I said smile, partner. I didn't tell you to milk it.
You're wonderful, friend. You really are. Now, will you be good enough to tell me what this is all about?
Well, to tell you the truth, Mr. Courtney, I'm Dennis Day, see?
Well, by George, so you are. That mustache...
Yes, sir, it was Mr. Willoughby's idea. See, he's pretty desperate for that loan, and he thought if I can...
Oh, excuse me. Yes? My wife's nephew. Confound my wife's nephew. Tell him I'm out. Tell him I'm busy. Tell him I'll see him tonight at the house. My wife's relatives. Every time I draw a breath, there's more of them on my neck. Her mother in one room, her sister in another, and her two cousins in a third.
Gee.
A man's home is supposed to be his castle. You know what my wife has done to mine?
It looks like she's lowered the drawbridge too often.
Yes, and now her nephew and his wife. And this morning he asked me to recommend an obstetrician. Do you know what that means?
No, sir.
An obstetrician is a baby doctor.
Gee, maybe they're going to have, if you'll pardon the expression, a baby.
Of course they are, drat it. But why do they have to come here and live with me? Oh, what I wouldn't give if they'd move to another town.
Yeah, I guess you... Hey, what would you give?
Huh?
Well, supposing I went to this nephew of yours and told him I was the doctor you recommended. If I could convince him that Weaverville was a terrible place to have babies, he'd move, wouldn't he?
Why, by golly, young man, you have brains.
It does seem that way for the moment, doesn't it?
Yes, and you're right. He would move, but fast.
Sure. And as a return favor, you'd agree to loan Mr. Willoughby and me $4,012 in cash.
Well, why the $12?
Well, it's sort of a down payment. I'd like to lie down again. Is it a deal?
Well, all right, I guess so. Here's my nephew's address. His name is Prentice. Now, don't forget, you're a baby doctor.
Okay. Gee, first a store clerk, then a rancher, then a baby doctor. That Kismet sure is a busy little guy.
Ha ha ha!
did you wish to see someone?
How do you do? I am Dr. Rittenhouse, Weiss, Kopf, Bonn, und Fu. Himmelschlager from way down Dorten there in Vienna der Dorten, if you please.
The doctor my uncle recommended.
The very same. Now, I understand that, your wife, well, the both of you are...
We're expecting a baby.
I'm almost certain that's what you'll get.
Gosh, I hope so.
Now then, where are you planning to raise this baby?
Where? Why, right here, of course.
In Weaverville?
Why, sure.
Ach, du lieber, hach mir nicht kein Scheinig.
Understand, Doc. Is there something wrong with that?
My dear friend, you want a fine bouncing baby, is that not so?
That's not possible here.
In Weaverville, they are just lying flat.
Golly.
I'm telling you, we got diseases here no one else ever even heard of. Did you ever hear of the Weaverville creep?
The Weaverville creep?
Every kid in Weaverville gets it.
My gosh, what is it? What does it do to them?
For a year after they're born, they can't walk. Not only that, but when they get to be about 8 years old, all their teeth fall out. Ah, but it'll go on forever, but maybe you'd rather not hear it. Maybe you've already decided to move your little family away from here, yeah?
Well, no.
In that case, I continue. Now, suppose that you are a very lucky man who manages to bring up a baby who is healthy. You realize that in this town also grow the meanest kids in ganze Welt für Stoppen zu reiten verloren.
Mean?
Every single one of them. We gotta spank them the minute they're born.
My goodness.
Ach, and the delinquency here. 95% of the children in this town are juvenile delinquents, and the other 5% shoot pool.
Doesn't the town council do anything about all this juvenile delinquency?
The town council? Why should they worry? They're too busy putting through laws to make it illegal to put anything but saloons on street corners.
But what about the drugstores?
They have all been forced to go underground.
But suppose someone was sick and needed medicine in the middle of the night?
They would have to eat pretzels with it.
Good gracious. I'm beginning to wonder now if this is the right town to raise my baby in.
It's about time. My bolt was getting pretty near shut.
You know, Doc, I think you're right. Gwendolyn and I are packing tonight. We're leaving this town the first thing in the morning.
Good. Say, did I tell you how much calcium we got in the water here? Every kid in town is a bonehead. You better leave.
Well, I already said we were going to.
Oh, yeah, I know, but I already had that line thrown up, so I figured I might as well say it. Well, auf Wiedersehen, Lumka.
Mr. Willoughby, Kismet, I did it, Kismet.
What?
You're in, Mr. Willoughby, and all because of me. Oh, I'm grand, I tell you, grand.
Dennis!
You may kiss me on the cheek if you wish.
Kiss you?
Sure, pretend you're a Frenchman. Go ahead, have fun.
Now look, Dennis.
Oh, I know. You haven't heard from Mr. Courtney yet. But wait till I tell you the news. You'll cheer.
What news?
Well, I've gotten you the loan for that ranch you wanted. This is a cheer.
Dennis, maybe it's you who should hear the news. You see, my buyer backed out. He phoned a little while ago to tell me the deal was off, and he was coming back to pick up his deposit.
Oh, my gosh. Then that means I'm still your employee?
Don't rub it in. It's tough on both of us.
And what about my $5 raise? Now, there's a silly question if I ever heard one.
Yeah. Well, it's too bad it blew up like this, Dennis, but I don't... Uh-oh, here comes that ex-buyer of mine.
Mr. Willoughby, not that fellow crossing the sidewalk. It can't be.
What? Why, of course it is.
Oh, no, Kismet, no.
Hello, Mr. Willoughby. Here I am for my deposit. Oh, hello, Doc.
G. Gates. Doc? Who are you calling Doc?
Why, this gentleman right here. He's the one who advised me to leave town.
What?
Oh, sure. And luckily, I found a store in Middletown I like even
better. Dennis, Dennis! Why, you?
Mr. Willoughby, no. Be careful. Your blood vessels will spring leaks.
Dennis!
through with you, your own mother won't recognize you.
Holy smoke, is this the change I've been waiting for? If I ever get my hands on that Kismet, I'll murder the bum.
Dennis Day will be back in just 1 minute to sing And Mimi. But first...
dream girl, beautiful luster cream girl. Hair that gleams and glistens from a luster cream shampoo. Hair bright, washed right, easy to do and dress right. Hair that's soft and silky from... a Luster Cream Shampoo.
Yes, Luster Cream Shampoo leaves hair with new three-way loveliness. Fragrantly clean, glistening with sheen, soft and easy to manage. Be a dream girl, a lovely Luster Cream girl.
Dream girl, beautiful Luster Cream girl. You owe your crowning glory to... a Luster Cream Shampoo.
With Charles Dant in the orchestra, Dennis returns to our microphone to sing And Mimi.
On the Rue de la Paix, there was once a cabaret and Mimi. As the night went along, there was suddenly a song in Mimi. All the world seemed to say that they loved the cabaret and Mimi. But I knew that when she'd see me, Mimi sang for me all along. Came in a passion, with a passion for dancing with the one that I adore. Taught her the dance in his passion, and for me she's singing no more. There was once a cabaret and Mimi. Now I'm sitting sad and dreamy, just for Mimi and her song. Came in a passion, with a passion, for dancing with the one that I adore. Taught her the dance in its fashion, and for me, she's singing along. The Rue de la Paix, there was once a cabaret, and Mimi. Now I'm sitting sad and dreamy, just for Mimi.
Remember, doctors prove the Palmolive plan brings 2 out of 3 women lovelier complexions in 14 days. And this beauty plan with Palmolive soap was tested on women with all types of skin. Dry, oily, even skin that was not clear. Yes, 36 doctors proved the 14-day Palmolive plan improves all types of skin. Brings fresher, brighter, younger looking complexions. So get Palmolive soap and start your 14-day Palmolive plan now.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Well, I hope you enjoyed our trip down memory lane, and we'll be back to do it all over again next week at the same place and the same time. Till then, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.